So in this, the closing talk with you of the retreat, I wish to speak to you about some specific areas, aspects of the daily life situation, and endeavour to present over the next 20-25 minutes a general overview and some of the detail. Yesterday evening, with the inquiry time, the two people who kindly came up to take the seat next to me, both were addressing the relationship to the larger picture, one in the language of the universe and the other in the language of food, global food. And we might say that at times we, as it were, look outside of ourselves, which is precious, important and valuable, and we can draw from that larger sense, that bigger picture. The presentations may be in the specifics of food, as was touched upon, such an important area of nourishment, and secondly, in the expanse of things, in another way, in the language of the universe. I mentioned this right at the beginning here, because how easy it is that rather a lot, and certainly some often too much time, in a way, is consumed with the personal relationships, either with ourself, with one other human being important to us in our life, or with the family, or another, work, colleague, boss, or whatever. And the dynamic of that, in very simple language, is the finite, that is, you and me, spending a lot of time looking at the relationship to another finite. And the mind, the heart, the views, the stories can go on and on in this specific area. And we kind of forget the bigger sense of things, which is significantly important. Because if you and I exaggerate, it is important, but if we exaggerate the personal relationship, either with ourselves or the other, the hand, I'm using as the metaphor here, gets closer and closer and closer and closer and closer to the eye, as I'm doing now physically, and that's all we see, that's all we think about, and everything else, which is vast and expansive, is literally blocked out. The finite is trapped in the view of the finite. And this is triggering an immense cost on this earth. So it's quite an exploration in life, and the word I used yesterday evening is to get a proper perspective on every relationship we have with another human being, so that she or he or they do not end up obstructing a wider vision, and in the blockage that takes place there, it tends to, in a variety of ways, inhibit love, kindness, clarity, wisdom, because we can't see clearly. So, first invitation and encouragement, with the sound reminders from yesterday evening, is of the larger sense to get a proper perspective on the intimacy of a variety of other relationships in life that you and I might have. Coming to the specific for a moment, it's not a view I have, and I'll add it up with a little extra weight of authority, not a view that the Buddha had. And what I mean by that, there is a lot of encouragement in the mindfulness world to sit every morning and evening there. And it sounds reasonable, and it would be a nice way to start the day and a nice way to end the day, having the privilege of listening to X numbers of people in all sorts of forms through the year. It is a minority who sit every day, morning and evening. It is a minority. And what happens in that viewpoint, which is put out by teachers, or one has read about it there, that what actually happens in that it might well start for some days or weeks, maybe after the retreat, and one is stimulated, one's got the energy and got the remembrance from the retreat. It's a fair bet it's going to fade. And then the language comes out, "Oh, I had a great retreat. And then after the retreat, I kept my practice going," practice meaning sitting there. "And then it began to fade out. And then I found myself going on the website looking for another place to have another retreat so I can get another hit, another injection, another jab, and that would keep me going for a few more weeks." I suppose it keeps us teachers in a job, but apart from that, it's hard to see what the benefit is. So, the Buddha did not adopt this view. Not at all did he adopt this view. His view is, life is to be lived to the fullest. His view is, he put it in a rather formal, structured language, right, in the Pali means that which is nourishing and fulfilling. That's the meaning of it. Gets translated as right because we don't have an English word to parallel the deep meaning. That which is nourishing and fulfilling. And then he addresses, most of you will know, eightfold path. What is nourishing and fulfilling in our view and understanding? What is nourishing and fulfilling in our intentions? What is nourishing and fulfilling in our communications? What is nourishing and fulfilling in our actions? What is nourishing and filling in a creative energy, sometimes translated as right effort? What is nourishing and fulfilling with mindfulness, with harmony, unity of mind, including the power of concentration? Once one says all of those are important, then that immediately brings it in the whole day. It's getting away from this ideological position of the yogi sitting to get enlightened. That was a historical view. It is a common view in India and also in the monastic system. But teachings of the Buddha are vast. They are expansive and they are deep. And so therefore, in relationship to what I just said to you, is that in the engagement with life, it might be really vitally important. It could be that our practice might just focus on everything that comes out of my mouth, or inspired with Tina, everything that goes into it. Both directions matter. It might be that we really, really need to take notice of our intentions and be clear about them, and to really see what action comes from it, and to really see what is my relationship to results. What is my relationship to the outcome, to the consequences, to the fruits there? So our practice might be a real regular consideration to the intentions, the actions we actualize, and our outcome to the results, which pretty much most of the time is never in our hands anyway. takes lots of conditions for outcomes and results. It might be now time that the mindfulness is really valuable and important. And one of the, shall we call it, understandable errors of judgment, put it like that, it's reasonably polite language, there, is we think, let's say we've got a difficulty in one area. It could be work, it could be studies, could be a problem in a relationship or whatever. And sometimes we imagine and think, if my other practices away from that will help me understand that problem. Maybe, maybe. So then every day, to give an example, we are doing our yoga. Every day we're doing some meditation. Every day we're going for a lovely walk in the nature. Every day we're eating so-called right food or whatever. And then we wonder, why isn't it working for me in this horrible job I've got, in these painful studies I've got, in this conflicting and difficult relationship? It's like saying to ourselves, I've got a fire over here, and I think I'll go and do something else to help put it out. Does it work like that? Sometimes we have to actually address the issue and not imagine that our mindfulness and our meditations and our yoga and complaining to somebody else over our cappuccino, how difficult our life is, and expecting somehow or other that's going to resolve all the issue. Itself, sometimes the fire that's going on without whatever needs real attention. And we are asking too much of these beautiful practices to resolve the issue. The beautiful practices genuinely can contribute to some harmony and well-being and some spaciousness, but that is in the service of the event, of the issue. And you just need to remember with this, we're not demanding or expecting too much of our practices, including our mindfulness, and have some automatic transference into resolving of life issues. The combination, the support of the two, are precious and important. another area with the nourishment, key thread and theme in these teachings. And it really is keeping heart and mind open, what really nourishes us. And in the daily life, in this extraordinary world, look, it's a lovely, it's May, it's lovely, blue skies, leaves, trees, nature, birds whistling. Life is all going on in its majesty and in its awesomeness there. And just to have exposure to this is genuinely nourishing. To feel the connectedness with it all, being part of it all. And all the reminders, as we did with our short walk towards the lovely lake yesterday, of the stillness of the trees and some of the lovely literature, the life of trees and their deep roots expanding out. We too need to remember, let us have deep roots as well. And the nourishment which can come through the literature, come through the arts. And there is much of all of that. And just yesterday evening with my 15-year-old granddaughter, I said to her, before I left, let's go to the theatre together. And so last night I had a look on what was on at the local theatre, and sometimes in the lovely harmony of it all, the city, this is Exeter, it's about 25 minutes from where I live in South Devon, got a play coming up in next week, and it's called The Extraordinary Lives of Women. I thought, hallelujah, Allah is merciful, what better timing for Dinah, the daughter, and her best mate, Olivia. I'll take them too, and if we can get tickets, this is what they're going to watch. And it's focusing on, in drama form, it's a play, on the lives of five or six great women and the great contribution. Sometimes it gets an idea, and to use that word that gets used too often, incredible synchronicity occurs. So I'm fingers crossed I can get a couple, three tickets. We'll see. So just use it as an example where the nourishment may come in different directions. And I'm sure you agree as well. Poetry, for me anyway, is a primary source of nourishment. And just reading poems, not understanding them, reading them again, reading it out loud, checking out what these words mean, etc. And sometimes something precious and beautiful comes out of it. Keats' beautiful poem of his relationship to the bright star and the relationship to the person deep in his life, expressing something of the vast in that communication. This is poetry has a kind of eternal presence for some of us. When we look at the daily life as well, there are plenty of challenges for us, and in that is also not only our relationship with people and relationship to food and relationship to the vast, but also the relationship that we have with the world of things and many, many aspects to this. And sometimes we read stories, and stories are really lovely and beautiful in life and in Dharma teachings, but, and there's a great freedom in this, by the way, of being able to relate one's personal life and personal stories and family stories and other stories, etc. And I've been reading a little bit about people's relationship, in this case, to clothes. Not forgetting that in the world of clothing and all the whole fashion industry and much more, that something like 30% of the pollution in this world is due to massive overproduction of clothing. Sometimes there are many rich people who spend a fortune on an item of clothing, and on average they will wear it three times. This is tragic. Tragic, the pollution, the cost of the air, the water, the land, just in clothing. And there's some explorations going on and discussions about this. And one which I reading, in this case, some guys in this case, getting together and wanted to make some contribution and put the word out. And they're in working in the business community and so forth. And the agreement that they made was they would only have a maximum of 7 items of each piece of clothing. Maximum 7 shirts, 7 trousers, 7 underpants, 7 pairs of socks, etc. And everything else was going to go, and they were going to live on 7 items for the week. there. And that's what they agreed on this. I thought, brilliant. But then I had to go and look in my wardrobe. there, I didn't get it down to 7, but at least it's under 10 in some things. 2 or 3 things, just a couple of jackets, blah, blah, blah. But more important, we hear something, we say, hey, that's a cool idea to do. Let me see what I can do. What can I give to the charity shop? What can I help to get recycled there? And I think all of these gestures, when engaged in, there, but please speak about it. Please speak about it. It doesn't have to be ego. Just say, I had this idea, I heard about this, and I tried this, without being preaching. And sometimes without telling anybody what they should do, we just speak out of our experience, and out of our experience to give some inspiration and for others to do that as well. And the word can then travel around. We had meetings in our street. This is community, a great feature of these teachings. Buddha says, Sanggong Saranang Gacchami. I go for, he doesn't say I take refuge. He's not into taking anything in life. I go for refuge, which means I'm in our language, we make a quiet dedication and commitment to community, to the gatherings. You have a community together this week. So some years ago, in our street, instantly forgettable little street in Totnes, etc., a bunch of terraced houses, and 56 of them. And someone got the idea to look at the way we are using energy. So a piece of paper went through all the doors, let's have a meeting together. Out of that, a number of people met together. And out of all of that, I have a little experience with all of this, if I may say. Years ago, twice stood for Parliament for the Green Party and knocked on every door in this town where I live, etc., etc. And people came together and we just shared. So 1 week we would take water, and I was just impressed what people were doing there, rarely having a bath for one, having a little, you know, what do they call those things, timer with the sand in the middle, and it turn it upside down, put the shower on, and 3 minutes or so there, and finish the shower in that period of time. And all the other conservations with the water. There were people on the street, it was precious to listen to them, who, with the heating, have it low, put on some extra clothes, but equally, the rooms in the house, which weren't being used, the door was shut and the radiator, if they had radiators, were turned down. So just never had anything on standby overnight. And plenty of other factors. Never taking the car to be washed in one of these car places. A bucket of water, much less. And more. I listened to these people. There were 3 primary motives, because I like asking questions. So 3 primary motives I picked up with this. 1, to save money. Why not? That's the motive, to save money. Another, thinking about their kids and their future and their grandkids. That was another motivating factor. And another, back to the larger picture. We all have to do something, and we all have to support each other, and that sense of the larger picture. So it's not to make saving money, it's not just about my kids or my grandkids or whatever, it's about the larger picture. Frankly, I couldn't care what the intention is. Do it. And we need each other to really listen and support each other. And taking another aspect of the importance of community there, that could include, and it's really worthwhile. And finally, we're coming back to life with this after, I'm hoping, after COVID, that keep your eyes open. What group is taking place? What areas of interest would be important to have a connection with? And some of you, plenty of you in this hall, have plenty of expertise and knowledge and years and a whole variety of themes. And there will be interest from others as well. So sometimes people just start up a group. In Totnes, where I live, it's a strong community base. People opened up what's called, you may have it here in Germany, Death Cafe. And Death Cafe was, people met once a week, there were usually 12 or 15 going, and there was only one subject, the relationship to death. Pretty vibrant, I have to say. So things which are not spoken get spoken. One of the ideas actually inspired by here in Germany is vegetables growing in different parts of the town, in the centre of the roundabout and on at the railway station. People in Totnes heard about it happening in Germany and said, hey, we can do that. And then there's a sign there, take what you need. All these are kind of gestures of community and contact and friendship, which is the inspiration for us, and someone has got to get it going. You are the ones, whatever it might be. And you might just talk with a person or two and see what you can offer. So we're looking at mindfulness, the meditations, taking care with the specifics, the precious use of yoga and meditation and many other forms to nourish us, and diet there. Perhaps remembering those links in the Eightfold Path so you have a really expansive sense and not restricting your explorations to formal meditations there. The use of retreats, the nature, and much, much more. And when we endeavour to put all of that together, as the being frees up and there's more, a little bit more depth, and I know some of you, just from listening to you over the days here, have, and some still are, really working to emerge out of a situation, whatever that may be. A little bit like Buddha's analogy, the baby bird in the eggshell, and just a feeling was to break free and expand out in that way, the moth to the butterfly, kind of metaphors. And in that emerging, coming out, quite naturally and organically, with the kindness and the love, in a way it's kind of too much for one human being to, as it were, hold. And what I mean by that, the act of sharing, the act of giving and supporting, the act of helping, comes naturally. It just comes out of the being. It's not because of some moral duty. It's not because religion or meditation or the Buddha or anybody has told us that. It just comes out of the being there. And it's really valuable and important that the service to others, the service to creatures, the service to the environment, whatever ways any of those are taking place, that the sense of help, the sense of support for, is beautiful. It is noble. It is one of the highest attributes of being human. But I'd say we have to take little care with this. And I've got two points in mind here. One is, when it gets difficult, whatever that difficulty may be about, the view can arise with regard to time. Oh, I am committed to others. There's a strong sense of the helper inside of me there. And then the view in time can arise, I'm spending too much time. It's bringing a lot of pressure in my life. And we think the problem is time. It's not. It's not the time. The actuality of it, there's something going on which we miss, which we're not seeing. Perhaps we're trying too hard. Perhaps we're putting pressure on ourselves there. And we sometimes escape that and just say, well, if I did less, the problem would stop. If I did less, less time, less time. It may do, but it might release another whole set of problems. Because understanding changes, not just changing time. And therefore, the regularity of the quiet checking in with ourselves and the good wisdom and counsel of others. Because one thing we do not want to do is to start undermining our natural wish to be a helper, our natural wish to support, our natural wish to share. And as been said regularly over these days here, the non-doing matters. The time out matters. The action-less matters, because that's where lots of renewal will come. And if we get this movement, the action, and the non-movement, the non-doing, get that right, the energies will flow easily and fluidly. And some of us, and I'm in the privilege of this as well, can say, Christopher's energy at this age of 78 is no different from 20. It hasn't changed yet. I can't, tomorrow it might change, but until today. And that is getting the flow right between the inner and the outer, and just exploring that movement, because human beings can't keep giving. There's the renewal which is required. And sometimes that renewal can just be, well, beautiful day. Whew. Nature's powerful. Total attention to a precious piece of music. Some time in the silence. And if we say, I really weave that into the day, it will provide some more inner space. And then I don't feel so contracted with the service, with the work, or whatever, or with the being a parent. Nobody is a parent 24/7. It's a myth. It's a social construct. Being a parent and grandparent, that, as like being a helper, if we use that word, or a teacher or a facilitator or a leader or whatever, occurs in the engagement of doing something for her or him or them, or on behalf of. So it's doing it very directly or on behalf of there. And if we actually look at the fullness of the day, there are plenty of times, even when the children, if you've got kids around the house, one is just keeping a quiet, mindful eye, of course. But other roles can be taking place in the house as well. It's not all, the idea, the role is always around the clock. No wonder there's a lot of pressure and stress. With the movement there as well, some, for a variety of reasons, have some time and space, some retired from the formal work, others having a break, others unemployed, or whatever. Do please keep your good eyes and ears open. See if you can connect in communities of men and women who are contributing something, or you contribute something there. And just take small steps in a direction. Commitment to Dharma teachings and practices. Commitment to the dedication to the networks of people. Wei Wu Wei. Actionless action. Appreciate what we can give. Appreciate what we can receive. Appreciate being out of the giving and receiving and just the being. Put that together, you'll be fine. No problem. Life will be a breeze. Okay, let's have a quiet minute, shall we? May all beings explore the experience of being human. May all beings remember our relationship to what is vast, immense, infinite. May all beings live with love and liberation.